From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, November 7th, 2017. And on this day, the Trump administration is looking to dramatically increase entry fees for Acadia National Park and 16 others. We'll look at how that could impact low-income visitors. And the post-conviction review of Anthony Sanborn continues with a key witness recanting her testimony. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at maingardens.org.
First tonight, a key witness whose testimony helped secure bail for Anthony Sanborn as he fights a decades-old murder conviction was back on the stand today in Cumberland County Superior Court. Last spring, Hope Cady recanted her testimony from the original trial that she had witnessed Sanborn murder Jessica Briggs on a Portland pier. As Patty White reports, Cady still maintains she did not see Sanborn committing that crime.
Sanborn's conviction in 1992 hinged largely on Hope Cady's testimony, and his bid for freedom during his post-conviction review could also largely rest on her. At a bail hearing last April, Cady testified that Portland police detectives threatened her and told her what to say in the original trial. During Sanborn's post-conviction review on Tuesday, Cady was asked by one of Sanborn's attorneys, Tim Zarillo, to reaffirm her more recent testimony.
When you testified before Justice Wheeler, this past year, did you tell the truth when you testified?
Yes.
But when Zarillo asked Cady for specifics about how police threatened her, she struggled to remember the events from nearly 30 years ago when she was 13 years old and living on the streets of Portland. At times, Cady's answers were in conflict with each other. She said at one point she couldn't recall having conversations with police, then several minutes later said she remembered long interviews at the police station. One thing Cady said she's certain of is how she feels about the police detectives who investigated the murder.
Were they professional with you?
No.
And what do you mean by that?
Just for me to be scared of somebody, they had to intimidate me somehow. I mean, this is, what, 20 years later, and I'm still scared of the name?
The name, she clarified afterwards, is Portland Police Detective James Daniels. But when the state questioned Cady, Assistant Attorney General Meg Elam tried to cast doubt on the claim that Cady feared police. Elam presented a note from 1990 where Cady updated Detective Daniels on where she was staying.
And left a phone number?
Yes.
And then wrote down, talk to you later?
Yes.
And signed your name?
Yes.
That note was the only subject the state asked Cady about, and Elam's questioning only lasted a few minutes. Sanborn's attorneys questioned her for about 45 minutes. Towards the end, Tim Zarillo asked Cady whether anyone had coerced her into changing her testimony. Cady said no.
And why did you decide that it was important to tell the truth about that testimony in April of this year?
I just felt it was the right thing to do.
Cady's testimony comes in the fifth week of Sanborn's post-conviction review. If Justice Joyce Wheeler finds it's probable that the evidence presented would have resulted in a different verdict 25 years ago, his conviction will be thrown out. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For the first time in about 3 years, the Land for Maine's Future Board is considering funding for more than two dozen conservation and water access projects around the state. They range in size from a boat landing in Lubeck to a 129-acre farm in Arundel to the 23,000-acre Big Six Township in remote Somerset County on the Canadian border. But funding is limited, and as Susan Sharon reports, the competition is fierce.
Of all the project finalists, Big Six has drawn the most attention. It's the one LMF project supported by Governor LePage, who has called the state program corrupt and criticized the use of public funding to conserve land and take it off the tax rolls. What's also raised eyebrows is the landowners' political contributions to LePage's campaigns. But the parcel is also a big deal for Maine's maple sugar industry, and proponents laid that out during a public hearing on Tuesday.
So it was identified by Maine's Maple Sugar Task Force as a priority for conservation.
Liz Petruska is with the Maine Bureau of Parks and Lands, which would manage a conservation easement on the property to preserve it as working forest, in this case to keep it in maple sugaring production. The landowner has suggested that absent the money from an easement, his business plan could include taking out the taps and cutting down the trees.
It's one of the U.S.'s most significant maple sugar production sites and accounts for more than 20% of Maine supply, so a really critical sugar resource.
But first, the Bureau and its partner, the Trust for Public Land, need $1.2 million in LMF funding to purchase the easement. The project has already been awarded $3.8 million by the U.S. Forest Service's Forest Legacy Program, which ranked it sixth out of 41 conservation projects around the country last year. Big Six supporters include legislators and conservation groups. It also has its critics.
A conservation easement, I always thought, is supposed to conserve something. I don't understand what this is conserving.
Kerry Hegarty of Jackman works for other landowners in the area. He told the LMF board the project makes no sense, since there would be no reason for a landowner to cut down 4,000 acres of productive sugar bush.
Why do that when the maple industry is booming anyway? It's going real good. I mean, excellent. And it doesn't need to be subsidized in any way, if that's what this is.
Hegarty and others point out there are 340,000 maple syrup taps on the property, leased to operators, all Canadian, who are charged $1.25 per tap. They say that's well above the going rate. William Jarvis is a forest manager from Jackman who works with other landowners with maple syrup operations. He wrote a letter to the LMF board urging them to reject the Big Six application because, he says, the trees, with all the holes from the taps, have little value except for maple syrup.
That's part of what I've got in my letter is the value of the wood is not that great. In 6 to 8 years, he's generating enough off the leases to cover all of the wood if he cut it down and sold it.
LMF board members, which include LePage appointees and commissioners from three state departments, must evaluate whether the competing projects have exceptional values, whether they're accessible to the public, and at significant risk of development. And they'll have to spend their money wisely. There's just $4 million available for proposals that total just under $7 million. But J.T. Horn of the Trust for Public Land says the application for Big Six is similar to other big working forest projects that have been protected.
I really think first and foremost it should be viewed as sort of a consistent application of this mix of federal and state funding that's protected lots of other land in the North Woods, and we're trying to stay in that same pattern.
The LMF board will begin ranking and scoring the projects at a meeting on Thursday. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And finally today, a different angle on recreation area accessibility. The next time you buy a pass to drive your car onto the grounds of Acadia National Park, the price may have nearly tripled. The Trump administration's proposing a substantial increase in fees at Acadia and 16 other national parks, in part to help address an estimated $11 billion in infrastructure needs within the system nationwide. As A.J. Higgins reports, many park advocates say the president's approach is misguided and will discourage low-income vacationers from visiting.
Here atop the summit of Acadia National Park's Cadillac Mountain, children scramble along stone walkways to take in spectacular views of Frenchman's Bay. Their families now pay a $25 admission to enter Acadia during peak season, but the Interior Department is proposing to increase that fee to $70.
I guess I'm relatively cynical about the motives here. I think it's just another way of discouraging the public's access to national parks.
David Oppenheim is a professional counselor from Camden who drove to the mountaintop on a recent Saturday. He says he's heard about the Trump administration's plans to raise admission fees to defray maintenance costs at the park, estimated at more than $7 million for Acadia alone. But critics charge that the additional money generated by higher fees barely begins to address the problem system-wide, and Oppenheim says he thinks he knows who the real losers will be if the changes are made.
Tourists who come here from a long way will have to shell out the money. They're not going to miss things. But the ordinary Mainer who comes here for the weekend, you know, several times a summer, is going to find that they're going to be more careful about money. They're not going to come as often. So it's going to have the effect of discouraging attendance at the national park.
Attendance has never been better at Acadia. Park officials reported a record 3.3 million visits last year, a half million visits more than the year before. Unofficial estimates by the Park Service this year indicate that Acadia was close to surpassing 3 million visitors at the end of September. Park visitor Susan Armstrong of Pennsylvania agrees that fee increases will likely discourage some from spending time at Acadia.
But then again, we have the cost of running the park, and how will that be maintained? And how? Because this park is beautifully maintained. Will it continue to be beautifully maintained if they can't raise the prices?
I'm actually encouraged by that response.
David McDonald is president and CEO of the Friends of Acadia, which promotes conservation and good stewardship throughout Acadia's nearly 50,000 acres.
Park visitors are aware of the challenges that the park faces, and if they believe it takes a balanced mix of revenue sources to address them, that's real progress.
Next week, McDonald's board will meet to formalize its response to the Department of Interior, which has set up an online site to accept public comment on the proposed fee increases. McDonald says park supporters are already demanding a more even-handed and comprehensive approach to confront the mounting infrastructure challenges.
I just hope that the Department of the Interior will take seriously the public comment that they get in this 30-day period and give consideration to a more balanced approach.
In fact, the 30-day comment period has generated nearly as much controversy as the fee increases themselves.
30 days is vastly insufficient.
At the National Parks Conservation Association, John Garter says the magnitude of the proposal demands not only a longer comment period, but also field hearings in Bar Harbor.
The last time there was a fee increase, it took place over quite some time and over the course of 7 months. During that time, there was ample opportunity for the public to have their views amplified and recognized by the department. And ultimately, not all of those fee increases actually happened.
Great.
Did good?
Yeah.
What a day.
Inside the Bar Harbor Bicycle Shop, Joe Mignotolo waits on customers on a sunny November day. Like other merchants in the area, he is concerned about what will happen when park visitors come off the mountain. And in a business environment where financial success is measured in rentals, T-shirts, or lobster dinners, the higher park fees could translate into weaker sales.
You know, we're worried about losing people, obviously, and we all worry about the people that are on the economic edge of being able to go on a vacation anyway, so it's one of those things we'll have to see where it goes, but, you know, there is some definite concern.
Those merchant concerns will be fleshed out in writing by the Bar Harbor Chamber of Commerce, which is also formulating a response to the department's website. Others can submit comments until November 23rd. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, November 7th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.